Welcome to the Infinite Scale podcast, the ultimate podcast for managed service providers. My name is James Vickery. I'll be your host. And I have a special guest today on the show. This is Mr. Anthony English. Hello, Anthony.
Yeah, great to be here, James.
It's a pleasure to have you. And I was just before our discussion today, I was thinking, how did we even meet? And it shows me the power of social media, because I think that I might have just randomly connected with you a few years ago, maybe because you had a background in IT, managed services, those kinds of things. We had a little interaction. I was reading back through the messages with one another. We had a little interaction. And we didn't really speak much thereafter.
No, but we didn't. But I immediately saw that you had somewhat crossed the bridge between IT, which I'm sure you're extremely good at, as I am too, and that scary world of marketing.
Yeah. Well, it was kind of funny because you have so many random connections on LinkedIn. I think we're all guilty of either building our network or automatically accepting invites on our network and not actually doing any business. And what I found with you is that slowly but surely you started to appear in my timeline more and more every day. And I found
sorry about that. Don't blame me.
I would have blocked you if I didn't find it interesting content, Anthony. But it's like all of a sudden you just exploded in the LinkedIn sphere with this, I don't even know how to describe it, but with your Rachel approach. What's the Rachel approach?
Okay, so let me just wind back a little bit. So I'm technical, I'm an IT infrastructure guy, and as I tell people, not in IT, you're lucky that I'm making eye contact with you. All right. So that was my background. I was then working through agencies, basically through MSPs. And I was frustrated because I was learning a few things about marketing and about pricing and things like this. And saying, look, basically giving them some free advice on how they should restructure their business. And they didn't listen. They didn't want to know. They just kept the old hourly billing and, you know, anyway, a few things that I found difficult. So I started to learn this myself. As I started to learn it, I started to help some colleagues who were also learning. They were going out on their own and they were in broadly in the technical space, usually in software, but some of them might have been bookkeepers or accountants or maybe copywriters, but they were broadly looking to somehow do that marketing stuff. They were very good on the hands-on, great at doing that, but in terms of getting their name out there and the whole salesy, the whole uncomfortable salesy thing, ugh, terrible.
Right. And I think that's a big challenge, particularly, and I can only speak predominantly about managed service providers because that's who we work with, but a lot of us really struggle with the concept of marketing. You know, we come from a technical background. We're used to assembling things. We're used to, you know, reading technical documents and white papers. And when we try to market, we tend to talk about the things that interest us rather than the things that the client needs or wants to buy from us.
Part of the problem is around that we're very good problem solvers. And so you throw a problem into a group of techies talking together and it's like throwing a bone to the dogs. They're all chasing at the bone, right? And so we just go so quickly into problem-solving mode that we don't ask the question, why do you want to solve this problem in the first place? And so one of the problems that I had was communicating that message that I've just explained to you, communicating that to other IT people who are my natural tribe. And so what I started to do was started to talk to non-technical people, because that kind of forced me, and from a background working in, you know, on some pretty big projects in banks and so on, you end up talking with people who are not in the technical space at all. They're not in software at all. They hate it. They don't want to touch their phone if they can help it. And they just find it all very challenging. So you have to speak their language, right? Mm-hmm. And not kind of overwhelm them with jargon. The temptation is for us to talk about ourselves, talk about our experience, talk about our skills. And that's not what they want to hear. That's not why we're even talking in the first place. So as I kind of moved into the more EQ space, you know, that kind of emotional intelligence, speaking to people more on their, you know, the touchy-feely stuff that you don't usually get in the technical space. You don't always get it in the tech space. And I found that I ended up talking to quite a few women. And what was really interesting, and this is a very, very interesting piece of marketing too, is that I was looking through a number of the women that I was speaking to and that I was hoping to work with as a business coach, because I had shared with them, hey, here's what I've learned. I'm a technical person, but here's what I've had to learn about the whole marketing and sales side. Right. And I noticed the name, a few names kept coming up, and one of the names was Rachel. It was not one lady, there were quite a few of them, and they called Rachel. I thought, wow, she's amazing. I'd love to work with her. She's incredible. I would love to work with her. Wow, that would be an, and so I kept seeing this name. It was probably confirmation bias. So then I did something really cheeky on LinkedIn. Oh my goodness. I put out a post. So remember, I was talking to men and to women. They were in the technical space, in the not technical space. So speaking about marketing, very, very broad message. Then I started working more and more with women because the men were just, they kept dropping out. They kept but somehow the women were saying, you're getting us, you're understanding our language. And so I put out a message. I said, look, I've been looking through, I know some amazing people, amazing women called Rachel. I know some amazing women not called Rachel. In fact, I know some amazing men not called Rachel. But let's play tag Rachel. I made up this game. Here's how it goes. Do you know a Rachel? And it can be Raquel, or it can be spelled a different way from the normal. But do you know a Rachel? If you know a Rachel, tell us why she's amazing. Just tag her in this post and tell us why she's amazing. We got 80 Rachels.
Wow.
So then here's where the marketing piece came in. You know how everyone says, oh, pick a niche.
Yep.
Your
niche was Rachel's.
My niche is Rachel. Everybody hates the advice to pick a niche, right? Pick a niche because you feel like it's narrowing you. You feel like it's cutting off your right arm, right? And so I said, well, okay, I help Rachel's. That was my niche. I help Rachel's in their business. And then I've narrowed that message too, because business is very broad. But as soon as I did that, here's what happened. Because I had been going, I help women. But once I said, I help Rachel's, everybody could think of someone.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
It's extremely niche, Anthony. And if you hadn't actually done it as an exercise, if I hadn't actually seen this in action, I might have just shrugged this off. It just seems so, so granular. As far as marketing is concerned,
well, it's not granular at all. I mean, I know it seems like it, but it's not a. I mean, the risk is that it seems gimmicky, and you don't want to be gimmicky or cute or clever. You know, too clever in your tagline or anything like that. But here's how I knew it was going to work. Somebody said to me straight afterwards, "Can you make a? Or maybe next week you should do. I help Michelle's, or I help Sarah's, or I help John's, or I help, you know, Peter's." I said, that's not going to work.
Yep. Well, I'd imagine that's not really the point as correct. Because people just know a Rachel, they do see I know you say it's not gimmicky, but they do get the twist when they see that. It doesn't necessarily mean it eliminates everyone not called Rachel.
Exactly. In fact, I do not have a single client called Rachel.
Now That part actually surprises me, given how much of your content I've seen targeted at Rachel's.
Yeah, but if I'm using an example of a client and some advice that I give her, I'm going to call her Rachel. Okay.
Right.
And so the other thing was, what was really, really fascinating for me was, first was that some people objected to it, not many, but some objected to it. Oh, you're just trying to target Rachel, like Rachel from Friends and so on. I said, look, I've never watched Friends. I didn't know there was a character called Rachel in it. We don't have a TV and I didn't even know about it. But the other thing that was very interesting, and this was super fascinating to me, is that women will connect with me on LinkedIn. And they, as I say, they could be accountants, they could be copywriters, they could be IT people, they could be software consultants, or they could be something else. PR consultants, I've got a PR consultant as a client. But they will say, I'm a Rachel.
Right.
Or they'll write and they'll say, so their name isn't Rachel, but they say, I'm a Rachel. Or right. else they might tell me, my grandmother was Rachel, or I was supposed to be called Rachel, or Rachel's my middle name, or my sister's called Rachel. Or, but it's not about the name, it's about the identity.
Right.
And they will say, they will write to me, I love your Rachel thing. That's what the women do. When the men write to me, they say, if I change my name to Rachel, no, that's not going to work.
So it's effectively the problem that you're solving is how people identify. So you've got I've seen some of your content, I've seen the tagline, you know, I help Rachels and so on. But really what that does is allows people to have a look at what it is that you actually do. So you're capturing the attention of a prospect. They're looking at it, they're identifying with it, and then they're saying, oh, okay, I'm a Rachel too.
It's incredible that, I mean, as you're looking through your, for example, on LinkedIn, I'm very active on LinkedIn, and you're looking through your LinkedIn feed and then you see, you know, CEO and founder of, which doesn't really mean much unless you're, you know, CEO of a Fortune 500 company or something. And then you see all of these job titles and so on. And then all of a sudden you come across this one that says, I help Rachels. What's that? So it's got the intrigue factor, but it's not clickbait either. In fact, I tell the story of one of my Rachels, you know, in like some imaginary Rachel. I didn't really do it as a customer avatar or anything like that. That's not how it developed. And that post, that tag Rachel post, took me like 3 minutes to write. It was just off a little bit of a whim, but it was also responding to real problems, to real words that real people have said to me, you know, about how they hate marketing, how they're really good at what they do, but they find it very hard to speak to.
That was Rachel calling, by the way.
That was Rachel calling, yeah. I can't take it now, Rachel.
That is really interesting. So as I said before, I think a lot of us in our industry, coming from a technical background, we find this really challenging. And I think that even the concept that you've just raised, it could be quite challenging for people to kind of see how they could apply that to their business.
And okay.
So you're out there coaching, you're out there talking to Rachel.
I am. I'll give you two pieces of advice that I found extremely helpful. The first one is to use the language of your client. Describe things, even if they get it technically wrong, describe it in their language, in their words. And so that's really, really important. So if they are saying something like, my website's not working, okay, you've then got to take it to, instead of, oh, well, look, you know, you've got a problem with it, or it's running too slow. You want to, first of all, find out why do they even care?
Right.
Okay, so if you're building a website, you might ask, well, if your website was an employee, what would be its job description? You might ask your client those words, that language, to try and get them to show them that you don't just know the technical stuff, but you're seeing things through their eyes. So that's the first thing, because if you can describe your client's pain and problem better than they can, they're going to assume that you've got the solution.
Gotcha.
The second thing, which has been super helpful for me in the sales process, because, you know, none of us likes to be sold to, especially the technical people. And we squirm and we feel icky about it. And people telling you, just do it, you know, fake it till you make it. Like, I don't think any of that works.
Mm.
So what I do is I really have a 3-part process, and it's very simple. So number one is, what's the problem and can I solve it? For that matter, do I even want to solve it? Okay. And you'll usually be able to work that out pretty quickly. What is the problem in the customer's eyes, in their words, and can I solve it? Number two is this worth solving? Sure, I could do it. Yes, we could implement this new CRM, but do they really care? Are they really going to use it? Why does it matter to them? Well, you know, all of our leads are slipping through the cracks and, you know, we're not keeping in touch. Okay, fine. Now we've got a reason. And then the third thing is, you say, well, look, here's the investment. I think it's worth it. I'm the service provider. I think it's worth it. But hey, it's not my money. It's up to you. Mm. So you're really jumping across the counter, trying to see things from their point of view and making it so easy. You say, look, I'm just going to help you. And you will even try and talk your way out of it if it's not a good fit. Absolutely.
I like the questions part. I read a great book years ago. It changed my life, actually, when I was predominantly selling managed services, called Questions That Sell. And it taught me to always just stop and ask questions and stop prescribing.
Absolutely. The key part, look, if I'm a dentist, and if I might be brilliant at what I do, but how good of a sale is this? Hey there, James, I'm a dentist. So I've got 20 years experience. I use the latest equipment. I use the latest techniques. I'm really, really gentle. Can I interest you in some root canal surgery?
No, you can't interest me in that at all.
We've got to start with, where does it hurt, right?
Right.
Got it. Asking questions. Me, just, and really what you're, you may not doubt my technical expertise as a dentist or as a managed service provider or something else, but what you're thinking as a potential client is, yeah, but would this work for us? Is this a good fit for us? Does he really understand us? Yeah, maybe great as a dentist, but do I even need this?
I also find questions actually increase the dollar value of the sale too.
Yeah,
because
totally.
When you understand the pain, you're able to scope out the solution in totality. And if the client declines that, you say, well, which part of the pain don't you want resolved? Whereas when you're kind of commodity selling, like if you just sell, like, you know, in our space, Anthony, it's you know, it could be $75 per user per month, or 50 or 20 or whatever it might be. And it's so easy to just put that under the nose of a client and say, that's our solution. But you haven't even asked the client what the pain is. You might actually find the dollar value per endpoint is actually 3, 4, 5 times as higher if you're solving the totality of the pain.
Exactly. Because you're understanding what the implications are if they don't get it solved.
Yeah.
And what the implications are for their business, what their implications are for them emotionally. I mean, you could be reducing their risk. You could be taking away a huge amount of grief. You could be increasing their revenue, increasing their profitability, reducing their expenses. There are so many things. You could save them from having to migrate to a whole new system, or you could be dramatically reducing their licensing costs. There are so many other things that you could be doing that maybe they haven't even thought of.
They definitely haven't thought of, without a doubt, because this particularly a buyer that's just looking to change IT providers, they might have some general pain points they're willing to share, like, you know, the current IT provider's a bit slow to get back to us, or, you know, the system went down on a weekend and we really needed it, that kind of thing. But they're not going to come to you with clarity on exactly what level of pain financially that caused their business, or what impact it had on employee morale, for example, those sort of things. So the other thing I found with asking great questions is that they value it so much that they come back to you again whenever they need a sounding board. Because you're good at helping them get the problem out of their brain and onto onto paper, if that
makes sense. I mean, in reality, that's what I do in my business coaching is, I give people confidence, not by, you know, giving them a sledgehammer and telling them to believe in themselves or to just do it. I don't do that at all. I never tell people to step out of their comfort zone. I just ask questions, just like Socrates, right? The ancient Greek.
Yeah.
The Socratic questioning. And I just ask questions until I find out, well, why are you even asking this? Why is this so important to you? What's the implications here? And so before we even jump into anything technical, I mean, I helped somebody recently with their rethinking how they were mapping out their website, a small team here in Sydney and in the not-for-profit space. And I asked them, that they said, yeah, look, you know, our website is embarrassing. We cringe and, you know, it needs updating and it's got wait a minute, before I even look at the website, I want to know if your website was a team member, what would be its role?
Mm.
Yeah.
That's a good question. I'm going to ask a technical question.
Uh-oh.
So you were technical, you're an IT guy. And now you're a business coach, marketing expert, I would call you, based on reading your LinkedIn profile. What was the mean time from techie to marketing?
Oh, yeah, it was a very, very long process. I was extremely slow, and I think my technical background was a huge disadvantage there. And I'll tell you why, because especially in the infrastructure space, we're taught to be completely cautious, do the due diligence. We're expecting things to break. We don't believe in dreaming. We just believe in backups and make sure that you've got you don't have a single point of failure. Mm. And so that made me far too slow.
Mm.
And that was a real, So that was a very, very slow transition, which is something that I think you can make very, very fast.
Yeah.
I'm evading your question a bit, but except to say that it was unnecessarily slow and it was not the fault of the world or the market.
Right. Gotcha. I didn't think that was evasive at all. the reason I ask it is it's actually something that I don't want to use the word study, I suppose, in that my experience was I was a very technical business owner running an MSP and the business really didn't grow to the great dizzying heights that I wanted it to. Mm. And at some point I made a decision based on the 80-20 rule, I guess, which is that I'm spending about 80% of my time doing technical work. I'm trying to spend the other 20% of the time doing marketing and sales, usually reactively.
Yeah.
Due to a leaky bucket syndrome in the business, meaning that we lost a client. So I better get my skates on and go and find another client. And I think my mean time from tech to being more sales oriented and customer oriented, if you will, took me about 2 years, but only because I completely flipped the 80-20. Like I had to divorce myself from the technical side of my business and my role. And now I work with a lot of MSPs around the world and I watch them trying to fit the marketing and sales into the 20%. And I see the exact same challenge.
Yeah. So one of the advantages of technical people, however, is that they are extremely good at diagnosing a problem, even a non-technical problem.
Mm.
So if you can consider that marketing sales, how do I get new clients thing with just as much diligence as you would a technical problem, then that can be very, very effective.
Mm.
And in fact, I never do any hands-on work. Not only for clients, but even for myself, I do absolute minimal hands-on work. And if somebody wants to teach me something or tell me to take on some software to learn something technical, I'll do it with great reluctance because I realize that any time that I spend typing, you know, like on the command line or something like that, is that's not scalable time for me unless I'm somehow able to sell the software or something, which I'm, you know, that's just not my, my gift. And so you, it's just like, if you're, you could be the chef cooking, right, in the kitchen, or else you could be writing the cookbooks so that other chefs can, so that you can actually start a whole movement of chefs, of other chefs who are using your cooking style, right?
Gotcha.
And yeah, and so that's a really, really key point, is to take the marketing side especially more seriously and not see it as a reactive or something that you have to do. Mm. It's something that you get to do and that you can love doing, and then it just becomes a joy. It's amazing.
Yeah.
But I love it, you know. And now I'm on YouTube and my YouTube channel has just blown up. Yeah, it had 100,000 views last month.
That's a lot of Rachels, Anthony.
It's a lot of Rachels.
The reason I think I pointed that out too is it's that whole concept of the 10,000 hours you read in a lot of books that you need to spend.
I don't believe it.
You don't believe it?
No, not at all.
Well, bear with me on this. most of us that are technical and that have been technical business owners, we've well and truly put the 10,000 hours into getting good at the technical side to justify to our clients that we know what we're doing and produce a good quality outcome.
Cool.
Very few of us actually make that transition to investing that same amount of time building our sales and marketing capability for our businesses. And to me, that's where the disconnect lies.
Well, okay, but I'm saying you don't have to. I'm saying that, yes, you should take it seriously, but I don't think you need to think, well, in 10,000 hours time, then I'll be a marketer. You're a marketer now. You just maybe not be doing it. So maybe you're not doing it so well if you haven't taken it seriously the way that you have
that
done.
That I agree with.
Transition.
Yeah.
But here's another thing that I've taken from the, once again, from my technical expertise. So I'm very comfortable on video, but I was never like that. And a lot of technical people, especially, particularly hate going on camera, unless it's maybe a Zoom call over some technical thing. But recording themselves, they find it really hard. Now, I switched and I used to hate the sound of my voice. And many people would say, well, I'll just keep practicing and these sort of things. But that's not what the switch was. The switch for me took me 10 minutes. I went literally from I hate the sound of my voice to the following day binge watching my own videos.
Right.
How did that happen? It was a mental switch in me where I realized, to my shock, that I was never going to win an Oscar. And that I know, and it still hasn't arrived. And that alone gave me immense confidence. It didn't take 10,000 hours. It didn't even take 1 hour. It just took a different perspective.
Got it. I think where focus goes, energy flows. And I think if you're not out there at least considering that you need to be doing some form of marketing, you need to be doing some sort of customer contact, you need to be doing some sort of, you know, honing some skills, like the question asking skills that you've raised, that didn't come naturally to me. You know, I was used to going in, sitting down, blah, 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 blah. This is who we are, what we do. You should buy the latest HP server. Okay. It's got the latest hard drives in it. And I would get quietly walked to the door. Whereas as I started to focus my energy on learning some crafts, marketing and sales crafts, my natural self started to come out a little bit more, and I started to be, I think, more authentic is the right word. And that's what I'm taking away from you today, is that it's your authenticity and your willingness to actually just go out there and say who you are.
Well, that's the other thing, is that a lot of the sales work happens before you get to the sales conversation, right? And even while you're talking to people, but it's still not the exact, okay, here's our proposal, and now that we're going to rubbing our hands together, we're going to get this money, are we going to get this deal? A lot of that prep work happens through. And I mean, that's yet another advantage that technical people have, is that they've just got great credibility. They're just going to say straight up in a meeting, much to the embarrassment of the sales, the sales people, that's just not going to work.
Yeah.
Don't say that. And so that integrity comes through, and being able to say, well, here's how we would get it to work. It's just phenomenal.
Mm.
So that itself gives you, I think, some incredible advantages as well, because you understand, and you understand the causes, and you understand the implications, and you don't have to, and you don't have to kind of force yourself out. You're just saying things as they are, and you're really putting the customers or the client's interest at heart. And once you do that, they will perceive that. Yeah. I mean, I had a conversation with somebody a few months ago, and I told her, you're not, look, I think it would be overkill to use me. I don't think it would be a good decision. I would not be investing this money at this stage, you know. Right. I got them as a client anyway, but I say it quite openly, because I am genuinely interested. I don't want to get a bad client or a client that's a bad fit because I've somehow jimmied them into it, you know?
Mm. Yeah. Well, it's interesting as well that if you don't apply this approach that you're talking about, the customer, what could be worse is the customer actually buys your prescription.
Oh, yeah, totally.
At a much, much cheaper rate and cheaper price than what they would have. It's what I've learned is everything you've said is true. What I've learned is that trust building is very important, and you build trust by asking a lot of questions and identifying the root cause of the problem. But I've also found that it's led to sales that are exponentially higher than what I was selling before. I was just trying to get the proposal under their nose and get the signature on there instead of actually solving a much, 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 much bigger problem at a much, much, much bigger price tag.
So that's why offering a couple of options in a proposal is usually a good idea, because you're able to, the thing is that nobody is buying a server. Nobody is buying even your service, okay? Just as you're not buying, like if you're a cardiologist, right, and I come in and I say, hey, doc, I did a Google search. I'm getting some chest pains. I did a Google search. I need a heart bypass. You're not going to say, sure, take off your shirt, hop up on the bed and let's get started, right? Okay, you'd be in prison if you did that. Your diagnosis is more important. But what am I paying you for? Am I paying you for, you know, 5 hours of heart bypass surgery, and then once the timer goes off, sorry, your hours are up, prepaid hours, here's the timesheet, I spent 5 hours, we still haven't closed you up yet, but you know, the 5 hours is up, what do we do? No, I'm paying you so that I'm going to live for another 10 years or 20 years to see my grandchildren, right?
That's right.
That's that's what I'm paying you for. Mm. And I do not care if you wave your magic wand and you can do it in 2 minutes, or, I mean, that's actually better for me. And I also don't care if you tell me you actually do not need a heart bypass, even though I think I do. Anthony, your problem is actually indigestion. You need to chew your food better, not eat so fast. Great.
Yep.
You know, that's trust. But trust is not putting on your website where the trusted provider, you know?
That's right.
Yeah.
Couldn't agree more. Well, I'm conscious of your time, Anthony. I know you're a busy guy and you've got a lot of Rachels to get out there and see. I've got one last question, and that is, how do our audience find their Rachel? Where do they start?
That's a great question. And the way that I would start is by listening to get your Rachels, get your clients to write the website for you. Listen to their language. They may not know that they're writing their website, but as they start to use their language to describe their mess in their words and what's important to them, listen.
Amazing. That's really good advice. Well, I appreciate having you on the show. I hope you'll be able to join us again for another episode. You seem like you've got a ton of wisdom there, Anthony.
I would be delighted. Yeah. I'll be thrilled.
And how does everyone get in touch with you?
Yeah, so LinkedIn is the best way. But what I would recommend you do is listen, is when you send me a personalized invitation on LinkedIn and say, and you heard me on the podcast here. Okay.
All right. Sounds good. Well, Anthony, thank you for your time. And thanks everybody for tuning in. If you'd like to get in touch with me, if you'd like to jump on the podcast or make any suggestions for the podcast, please send an email to hello@benchmark365.com or ping me on LinkedIn, James Vickery. And look forward to hearing from our next guest on the next episode. Thanks a lot, guys. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us. If you'd like to get your own copy of Infinite Scale, just go to benchmark365.com. And if you have any comments, feedback, or suggestions for future podcast episodes, just drop us a line at hello@benchmark365.com. Thanks for listening.